Hello again, Michael.
Hey, Alex.
Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me on.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that we are going to explore and pull apart so many huge issues today. I know we've been talking about them behind the scenes, but it's like time to put them out there in the world as well, and not just be between you and me, but to throw out these ideas. So I'm really glad that you're here with me today to do that.
Cool, thanks.
So we, I'm hoping by the end that we've actually tied a few different things together.
Right.
So if we start with the most recent things that we've been talking about and hopefully work backwards and then tie everything in together. So the most recent thing that we've discussed is the idea of female overlords in this world. We have been looking at the idea that despite the ideas of patriarchy, despite how the world appears to run, that behind that again is some kind of a system of female overlords. And you mentioned the word mutants.
Yes.
Because it does look like we're looking at a mutated female energy. We are not looking at that there is no relationship or connection between human females and this female mutated female energy that we've been playing with.
Right. And it's also not We're not referencing the goddess or whatever, the goddess energy that some of the females are talking about. This is from my viewpoint.
Right.
It's something even bigger than that. Because I believe that this kind of energy was also meant to squash out the true feminine nature, human femininity.
Right, right. So just to try and give a little bit of an overview as to where this comes from, for myself, one, I was looking at the work of a woman who's trying to introduce or reintroduce sensuality back into the world, sensuality for women. And it really gave me, it just made me look deeply and feel deeply about what it is like to be a woman in this world. And how often, in how many ways we are cut off from, say, sensuality or pleasure on a really deep level. The whole good girl, bad girl thing is huge. I know the women will know what I'm talking about. I'm not so sure if the guys do. But that's a part of this. It's a really big part of it. Something happened a few days ago which really made me think about how women police other women, about how you're either a good girl or you're not. You're in the good club or you're bad. And for women, it's very hard not to be in the good girl club, because if you're outside it, you are... It's like being, what's the word, when you're kicked out of a society, you know, when you're just outcast.
Exiled?
Like an exile. So therefore you are, you don't have access to your own sex in a way, because they will shun you. What I got to thinking about, and I'm sorry if this is a bit hit or miss, but I think it will all come together, is how did women get to be like that? The women I was referencing about the sensuality was talking about how disconnected women are from their sensuality, from every level of themselves, even as far as like a direct connection between a woman's connection to her genitals, to the whole sensations that she could have but doesn't have, that most women are completely cut off from them. They're in many ways they're numb or dead. This whole the best way would be to look at a man, you know. A man is in constant, I believe, rumor has it, constant connection with his genitals. Correct me if I'm mistaken.
No correction needed.
Right. And I think you actually, for the most part, couldn't get further away from the truth with women who are, so many of them, just completely closed down. That area of them is shut down, numbed, disconnected. So I got to wondering about what caused that. How could that be? I know men have the external genitalia, but even so, how could you get to a point where you are so cut off from this, you know, huge part of your body? And that got me thinking about patriarchy, about, so we're told that, you know, that males have ruled the world, that they run the show, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But when I started looking at it, I realized there is no way, that men or males could ever understand the female psyche enough to manipulate it into this monumental shutdown that we see in women. I mean, you only have to put the idea of romance before a guy and they will just glaze over, and they have no understanding of what the hell romance is about. Some of them know how to manipulate it. Some of them know how to say the right words at the right time, you know, bring flowers at the right time, do this, do that. They know how to work the formula without actually having any connection or understanding to what's happening within the woman. Therefore, you know, we have to ask, who constructed all these structures that manipulate women to the most amazing degree of closed-offedness. Part of the reason why I really wanted to go into this is just in my own life, I have always felt like to be a woman, you live in a very small box, and there's so many things you can't do, and so many ways you can't be, and so many things you do have to do. And I felt so much anger in the last few days when I started to think about, hang on a minute, there is no way that any man or group of men has ever constructed this tiny little box that so many women live in. They would just never understand how to do it. Therefore, we started looking at the possibility that it's some kind of female energy.
Mm.
Now, I really don't think that it's... there's the intensity of the cleverness of it, the cunningness of all this, how every angle is manipulated, to me goes way beyond any human female or even group of females. Therefore, I had to start looking at a bigger idea, or we started looking at this, a bigger idea of something, an energy that is female, but not human.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's when I had stumbled across the, when I was doing some research, when I did the Hidden Agendas, I covered a lot of the Masonic, the Masons, the Brotherhood, the Patriarchy, like you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then a third party had mentioned, how can a secret society who's supposed to be so secret be screwing up so much that they're right out in the public. And I give that a little more thought. And it's like, well, you know what? That's true. That's true. They're right out there. It's like they're the Masons or the Illuminati, or whatever. It's just like a brick wall. They're there to deflect whatever's behind them.
Right. Right. A very good front sort of thing.
So
facade.
I thought, well, if there's a brotherhood, you know, we're seeing a lot. I remember seeing a lot of female actresses that have a lot of power, a lot of influence. I thought I'd think about Nancy Reagan being the power behind Ronald Reagan, yada yada, the Queen. So I did a little sisterhood research, and I didn't watch a lot. I just I found some clips on Jodie Foster, Diane Keaton, and had the idea that there's some powerful women in Hollywood. Just kind of put that in the back burner. Let that sit for a while. And then when we were talking about, I think during our last podcast, we were talking about the concepts of good and bad, and we talked about of wants and everything. And then I had remembered the sisterhood. So we actually, you and I actually started to question, could there be a sisterhood behind?
Right. And when I started, I remembered what you'd said about, you talked about the sisterhood. And then when I had all these feelings, you showed me just the other day a YouTube thing on, yes, and it was that was on Jodie Foster. And but bringing in some others and starting to get this feel of this female energy that is so not in any way what we consider feminine energy to be like. Now, I actually don't know if anyone knows what feminine is, but there do seem to be certain traits that you usually find among human females, healthy human females. And that is, you know, things like there is generally a softness, a caring about life. Receptivity is meant to be a quality of the feminine.
Right.
So, what we are not seeing with this other female energy, and so yes, look, when you say the sisterhood, we're playing with the idea that there are the overlord females, mutant overlord females. This is just a name that's been made up, but sort of does the job. Who then, in some way, manipulate these females, our earth, the earthy females who are playing the role, you know, who are the, they're priestesses, I guess.
Right.
So like the people that you say in Hollywood. But, so what we're seeing is this lack of softness, receptivity, a caring about life, just all the qualities that we associate with the feminine do not seem to be in this female overlord or their priestesses. The feel of them is very, very different. Very different.
Right. And yeah, it was when we dipped into that, when I dipped into that research, it was Hollywood. It also led to the sports, some sports like tennis.
Right.
There was a sisterhood presence in the world of tennis. And when we started expanding upon that, looking at just how long the queens live.
Right.
You had mentioned how long, hundreds of years each, you know?
Well, yeah, not quite hundreds, but...
Well, 100. Living to be over 100 years old is quite a feat. And, you know, it's just that we sat back and we said, hold on. The Masons couldn't have done this. There's no way they would know the female
and
psyche.
Men, men could not do this. They just wouldn't know how to run it. The intricacies, like I said to you, you put a few females together and World War III can have happened in 10 minutes. Not one drop of blood shed, no voice raised. And there could be men in the room and they wouldn't pick up on a thing. The subtleties, intricacies of female to female conversation and communication is so intricate. There are so many levels and layers, you know. Men couldn't have done this. A male energy could not have done this.
No.
Not in a million years.
No. That's not knocking the guys that they're saying everybody's stupid.
No, it's not.
Nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with that. It's simply, this is an exploration for one thing, you know.
Right.
So at the end of the day, we might finish the podcast and go, actually, no, we've just changed our mind completely. I know in myself just how angry I felt at, hang on, this life up till now, this tiny little life, and what if I've been manipulated by same-sex species? That's just so... you just can't swallow that. I don't know why, but I guess partly we're so trained with the whole thing that it's the patriarchy that the men did it. And I'm not. I don't hate men in any way. I totally respect men. But we're not talking about... Even when we're talking about patriarchy, we're talking about male priests.
Yeah.
But there's no way... Sorry, there's no way that any male priest could ever... Is he ever going to grasp the female psyche? So trying to spread out a little bit from that to give a little bit more... Mm. Flesh to the bones of this, why this has been big for us and why we have been playing with it. Prior to that, I started looking into architecture and I started making some interesting finds with architectural designers, interior designers. Hold on, I better back down just a little bit. Sorry, this is hard trying to pull this together. With these architectural designers, interior designers, there's a couple of things stood out very strongly. One is that there's an enormous amount of men involved in architecture and interior designs, gay men. Now, what do I want to say here? First thing I want to say is that we don't have enough words in the English language. So we are very limited. And if I say gay men, then there's an immediate like, well, you're not allowed to say that, or you're attacking them. In actual fact, we want to stretch this out a bit. There are gay men, and then there are others. In the same way that we're trying to, or I'm trying to say in this, I don't want to pull you down if you don't want to say it too, that I want to say that there are two types of female energy. There is the human female energy, and then we're suggesting that there is some kind of mutated overlord female energy that's very different. So I think there are two types of, there could be two types, playing here. Energy as far as the gays go. What are we looking at here? We're looking at same-sex overload, we're looking at, well, I think I've been looking at an energy that is, it doesn't have a balance, okay? I think there is probably gay men out there who are very happy together, and that's fine. And then there is another energy that is, that somehow is very similar to this female overlord energy. It is a it is an so hard. It's a hard, unyielding energy without any kind of softness or receptivity. It is an inhuman energy, and I'm not saying this is not an attack on gays. I'm saying that I think there are there are other energies at play. There isn't just one gay energy. There isn't just one female energy. What we've been missing is that there are a number of different types, but we've lumped them all together into one. And so hidden behind one energy is another one. And this other one is turning the world into a hard, angular, non-receptive, empty, unfeeling, unyielding, cruel and heartless place.
I'll jump in a little bit.
Please, feel free.
When you're talking about that and you're talking about the architectural world, I'll just take the conspiracy side of the road, which it seems like the higher up, the higher you go in the system, meaning the postgraduate, you become an architect. The higher up you go, the more you learn about the great ones, the arts. Oh, you know, this person is so wonderful, this person is so famous. You learn about the ones that get pushed in our face.
Yeah.
These people, they climb the ladder, they get famous, they become the architect. And a lot of their influence is actually from the ones that are being pushed through the school, through the classroom, through the post-education.
Yeah.
So they go on and they become the interior decorator and the architect. My little theory, or my little conspiracy thing that I came up with, idea, is that the males, the architecture is generally male dominant. They build the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
The feminine energy, or the proper female energy, is supposed to come in and add the softness to that structure. Supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But the higher up we're seeing, the higher up you go. A lot of the books we looked at, a lot of the architecture magazines we looked at, same sex energy. I'm not gay bashing, I'm not lesbian bashing, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, so we're only seeing one type of energy flow into buildings.
Yes. There's no balance.
Right.
There's no balance to the structure that way. And then we started to see patterns. You pointed out, that you had started to see patterns that the interior decorators were taking that structure and putting the same things over and over again.
Right. So just before we go into that, because I definitely want to branch out on that. We both saw that there's an enormous amount of gay architects. Enormous amount of gay architects.
Mm-hmm.
I just was so surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And these are high up architects. These are the ones who are in the architect books. So they're the ones who are touted. Whenever you get the touted ones are the ones that everyone else follows. So the ones who get in the books. We're not talking about the little ones. We're talking about the big touted ones who are referred to again and again. So like you say, Michael, they are the ones who will be taught at architectural college. These are the ones that you follow.
Right.
So what we're looking at here, or certainly what we're seeing, is seems to be this concentration of same-sex energy going into the designs of our buildings, like major construction, huge buildings, buildings that are touted. What's going into it is a gay energy. Okay, I don't want to use the word gay because I want to split it up. There are homosexuals, but this energy seems to be different because these are the people who are pushed into your face. You know, healthy relationships are quiet, private affairs. whatever. The relation, look at any relationship that is pushed into our face, and I don't care whether it's same sex or, you know, male, female. There's something not right when it's pushed into your face. So you could take the Angelina and Brad, you know, just as easy as you could take the the same-sex relation architects. For some reason, they're being pushed into our face and touted as these are the people to follow. These have something to offer you. So hard to explain.
Well, they're the ones that are structuring. They're but the ones that
they are. They're structuring our world.
They're structuring the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll be the one that goes out on the limb and says that when they're the ones that are the higher up you go, the more you sell out. This is what I'm seeing. I'm gonna call it as it is.
Mm-hmm.
I see it in Hollywood. The higher up you go, the more you sell out.
Mm-hmm.
It was a documentary I watched. Seems to be a popular pattern in Hollywood. You bear the sign of initiation. If you're going to climb to the $100 million club, initiation means, well, selling out. It could be sex. It could be blood. It could be,
right,
you know, whatever.
Right.
Right,
so that's it. Yeah, in order to be the touted, the big ones, the ones who push in your face, you have sold out in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at the same time, we're told these are the people we should bow down to. These are the people we should pay attention to. These are the people who are creating the structures in our lives, the structures that are just getting bigger and bigger that are being pushed into our faces, mm-hmm. you know, everywhere. It's important to know what energy, you know, you walk into a building, what is the energy you're walking into? So we're looking at, an unbalanced energy.
Exactly. I was just going to say the same thing.
Right.
It's not balanced.
No, it's not balanced.
These people are not balanced.
Yeah.
I will say it. You can look at them and tell. There's something wrong with this person. They're out of balance.
Right. And but we're not supposed to say anything because we're meant to be politically correct. So they can do whatever they want. They can create whatever structure they want. They will be touted. Should we say anything? Should we question anything? You know, there is just, you know, mighty comeback. But what I know I would like to do here today is just open up the doors enough for an exploration for people to go, hang on a minute, that's really interesting. Look at this, look at this.
Yeah.
Now, so then I wanted to start moving inside the structure because that's just only a little part of it. Once I started looking at inside, I started going through architectural digests, books that were about famous architects or architectural designers and their homes and what their homes look like, because these people are so lauded. And I started to see some really strange things.
Patterns. You were seeing patterns.
I did. And then it would just blow my mind because, you know, I said to Michael, I keep finding this, this, and this. And then I would turn a page and it's right there. The things I'm seeing are right there. So the patterns that I saw within, and please, by all means, go out to the library, get these books and look for yourself.
Yeah, grab an architectural digest. Go grab the, you know, famous architects and interior designs. It was interior designers and architectural designers.
Yes, most especially the architectural sort of designers. So there seems to be a mix. And their homes. Have a look at their homes.
Their homes, right.
This is where you're going to see. Everybody tells their own story through their own home. You do, and so does everybody else.
Right.
So within these homes, what I see is loads and loads of statues. You're going to find loads of different types of statues in their home. And you are going to find disembodied statues. You're going to find torsos. There will be the statue of a body without a head or without limbs.
Mm-hmm.
You will find around the place there will be feet or hands. So different parts of human bodies.
Yeah.
Not real bodies, okay? We're talking statues. We're talking pottery. We're talking... you'll also see it in paintings. They've got real weird shit paintings on their walls.
Yeah.
They have, Michael noticed this one, animal sacrifices. You'll have animal skins on the floor.
Yeah.
Or things made from animal skins.
Yeah. They had various degrees of animal statues around. So it's, I mean, when you were talking about the torsos and the hands, the feet, it's disembodied.
And the heads. Loads and loads of heads from the head up.
So basically, you got a disembodied or a headless body or a body without a head and limbs.
Yeah.
On a level.
Yeah.
And then it's pushed as art so that these people, when they were going through their indoctrination through the their architectural classes and post-doc, whatever you want to call it, their doctrines, this is pushed as art.
Yeah.
So they think that they're putting art there. When in all actuality, if you really look at it on a 5-sense level, it's like, ugh.
On a five-sense, you go, what the fuck? So you and I, we talk about what we call the ayahuasca level, and it's just a name we made up to, because we both have the feeling that there's another world. There's a world that mirrors us, or there's a world that, you know, take the ayahuasca and you can see it, or it's like the etheric world, whatever you want to call it.
We just call it, etheric,
we just happen to call it the ayahuasca level for short. So I'm wondering, if you were on the ayahuasca level, what are you looking at when you see these, look through these people's houses? Is you're seeing body parts strewn all over their home.
Mm-hmm. Animal skins and dead animals all over the house.
Different types of weird deities. Really quite often scary, uncomfortable things. The paintings on the walls are quite often like, oh, yuck, what the fuck is that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
So, and on top of that, you look through their homes and you find nothing. There is no, the feminine energy that I mentioned previously is not there. There is no softness, receptivity. It's all hard angles. It's so unpleasant. For myself, I had this visceral feel to homes. And I'm looking through this stuff and I feel like I'm looking at a museum piece or a show home somewhere. I can't see that any human being lives in these places.
Some of them you call mausoleums or tombs.
Yeah, mausoleums, tombs. There's something so lacking in them. And you know, these are the people who are creating the major structures around the world now.
Creating the structures and then they're telling you how to decorate it.
Yeah, that's right. That's a whole other... Let's bring this out in the open. Let us say how goddamn ugly most interior design is. Art, all sorts of art going back who knows how long. The modern art, you know?
Right.
So much of it is so fucking ugly and it's horrible and it just... They did some... I remember reading some experiment or something with people in hospitals. And they had they tried different types of art at the end of the bed for the person who was getting well. It was something like a beautiful rural scene was, I think, the most healing. And then there was something else. And then the one that delayed healing the most was modern art. So it's actually having this sort of negative effect.
Right.
We keep being shown stuff and being told it's art. And it's ugly. It's really ugly, you know? So much of it is just, you do not have, does not give you any sense of smoothness in your body, any sense of feeling of life, of vitality, exactly. Of joy. Exactly. It's goddamn ugly.
It's like you just said, there's no life. And there's no life when you're looking at a torso without a head or without arms or legs.
No.
There's no life when you're just looking at a head. You even said the portraits.
Well, that's like what I was feeling. Paintings. Yeah, I was thinking that, here's another thing, you know, that if you look at a portrait, what is it? It's actually someone who's been beheaded. Yeah. You know, for all intents, it's just a head. It's a head on a wall. You know, in England, when they used to chop off the heads, they would put them on spikes.
Right.
You know, I don't know, but I was playing with the idea that it's possible that that's what you're looking at when you see a portrait. Who invented? Because the old days, they used to have the whole body, and the painting was the whole body.
Yeah, and then a lot of the houses, I remember when you were looking at the pictures, you said how angular it is and uncomfortable that you can't really rest there.
There's nowhere to rest in those homes, nowhere.
There's nothing soft, there's no...
And you remember I read you out some of that shit from when they were extolling. So each of these architects will extol all the other architects, or each of the designer will talk about the wonderfulness of another. They all back them up.
Yeah.
And I read out this group of words which just John was laughing. I don't know if you remember that. It was so pretentious. And I wondered if there's like a pretentious word generator that they use, you know?
Oh, right.
You know, to describe the works. It's like they use for describing wine, except it's so much more over the top.
It was gibberish.
And it's gibberish. You're exactly
they
had their right.
Own language, so.
It's over the top and it's complete. What the fuck are they talking about?
Yeah.
So this is, you know, we're looking at this world that we're living in that we keep accepting. I can prove what I'm saying right now just by the word sofas.
Yeah.
You try and go and buy a sofa now.
Yeah.
You know, go into any shop, sit down on all the sofas. Are you going to find one you can actually be comfortable in? You know, you've got to sit your ass about 3 miles back from the, and then you're leaning back at this horrible angle,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to have 6 million cushions to try and bring you forward enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hard and they're angular and the materials are often horrible.
Yeah.
And they're so lacking in sensuality. See, this is the thing. This is the big thing, right. Kind of coming full circle now. This lack of sensuality in the world that we're seeing. Sensuality has surely got to be such a feminine, female trait.
Right.
And I think maybe that's why we got confused and couldn't even consider the fact that there could be these female overlords, because we always go, oh, female, feminine, soft, sensual, etc., instead of thinking that there could be a really hard, Kali-type energy that is not associated with human females, that is something else that is mutated or unnatural, or at least it's not natural to us.
Right.
So this lack of sensuality is just everywhere in the world. You know, and I'm trying to reclaim mine, and there's nowhere for me to go to find it because everything is hard and unyielding and rigid and angular.
Mm-hmm.
And within the female world, you know, we police each other. We do, you know, you're a good girl or you're a bad girl.
Right.
There is a book I read a long time ago called Women's Inhumanity to Women. And, you know, she was brave enough to start, you know, to speak up about this, how inhuman women can be to other women. And, you know, I'm wondering, where did this come from? I don't believe that inhumanity is a natural human female trait.
Right. Right.
And then, you know, the same thing again, if we look at it as from this female overlord point of view,
right.
Okay, what's also been done to the men?
Right. Well, we were talking about, I think in the last podcast we touched on it, mutant versus human, human versus mutant. We also covered quite a bit on entities.
Mm-hmm.
Entities, and I'm going to repeat it again, because I keep running across it no matter which rabbit hole I go down. A lot of the research, Hollywood, music industry, arts.
Yes, the arts.
Like right now, I've been doing some research. I am an amateur graphic artist, but I never took an art class. I taught myself how to do graphic art because when I was younger, I was always interested in comic books and fascinated with the artwork. I said, oh, I wish I could do that, and all I could draw was stick figures. Well, right now I'm teaching myself how to do my own graphic art novel.
Yes, and I'll just come in here and do a small plug for Michael. Michael has started up his own graphic art business, could you call it, or a comic. It's called AM Comics.
AM Comics, yeah.
And he's doing his first graphic novel, which is going to reach in and just blow open a lot of different, I don't want to call them conspiracy doors, because you're exploring different avenues, a bit like we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
He has two characters. I'm going to put a link to his page when I put this up. I know you've only just started your website page, and you've got a Facebook one as well.
Right. I can give you the link to both, the website and the Facebook.
And, you know, one thing I really like about Michael's work is how balanced it is, because he has both the male and the female character, and that's what he's working with, because that's, you've got to have both energies to generate anything. Neither energy is special by itself, but put the two together and the alchemy is just unbelievable, which is, you know, it takes me back to, okay, so the cleverness of what's going on here, this, the unbalancing of the male and the female, how the female has been shut down, and in so many, it's just so unbelievably clever. The more I look at it, it's amazing.
Right.
And I think, I've been wondering that if this was a mutated female energy that we're looking at, these female overlords, then the biggest threat to them would be the females, just because the females, human females, would understand so much more easily if they could see what's going on, the game that's being played. It's easy, you know, women always know when another woman is playing a game. Like I say, World War III could be going on and the guys, you know, would walk away going, that was a really good evening.
Right. Yeah. And and when people sit there and think that, I watched The X-Files.
Right.
I watched The X-Files back in the 90s. And it's not where I got the idea for the graphic novel. The graphic novel, I wanted it to be balanced. I wanted to, a friendship, man and woman, the way it's...
But I can see why, that's one of the reasons X-Files worked, was because it had the male and
the
female.
They did, but the point you had pointed out when we had to watch a little bit of the X-Files was Scully was taking the male role, being the hard, scientific, logical mind, while Mulder... was being the feminine,
mm-hmm.
being about feeling and intuition and things like that.
Right.
So they even flipped it there.
Yeah, I think that flip that's been happening started in the 90s.
Yeah. So they flipped that there, but the we'll have links to Liminal Space if you want to check it out. It's just in the early stages, and AM Comics is spelled with an X at the end, not the CS.
Yeah.
But I'm going to get back to the research has been leading me down the entity path. Entities again that I had mentioned prior, and one of the big avenues where you can actually witness entities in action. It's a little harder to see on screen with Hollywood, but is magicians. I did a little more looking, street magicians, some famous street magicians. You can go to YouTube and just type in demon magic or demon magicians. There's a channel out there, I think it's Zendrius or something like that. He's got some good clips, which made me question, like, David Copperfield and the occult. Again, the occult, all you have to do is go into the occultism, and you can find out that the black magic is from the occult, which has to do with entities, with a sorcerer being able to pull the entity in and use that power. So we're getting a lot of influence from the other world. Granted, if we've got another world just beyond the veil that we can't see. The point I'm trying to get at here is I've been running across this a lot of research. Alex has been running across a lot of books that all of a sudden will say, this person channeled this entity, or this person channeled this. And you should be like, oh, fuck, you know? So a lot of stuff that's being touted as the you know, these are the gurus, these are the people, seem somehow to have been touched by some sort of entity or something, or know someone, or got their information from someone, or something like that.
So you said, like, there's just so much more of an otherworldly presence in this world now, is that...
Yeah, and it seems like the higher up, like when we got to the architects and everything, we're seeing the art. And the art, as I saw in the research, Hollywood is supposedly so artistic because they allow their inner muse to come through.
Right.
Their inner muse.
Mm-hmm.
The graphic novel book that I did some research in,
mm-hmm.
I understood everything this lady was saying. She was very famous. She worked for a very famous publication firm. But then all of a sudden she's saying, allow the voices to come. Let those voices have, you know, fill your head, blah, 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 blah. That way, you know, you can write the story more easily. To me, that's opening yourself up to an entity. That's just my interpretation of it.
Right.
I seem to be running across it all the way.
Right. Right, it does. I mean, and you look at your, if we go gauge it with the TV programs now, again, how often is this world, other world coming through, this bleed through?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's something, well, something that we kind of talked about is this world sort of being prepared or being taken to the stage where if these entities come through into this world, we wouldn't notice them because they would fit right in. So, for instance, this energy that we've seen, like through the architects, for instance, this hard-edged, unyielding, angular, lack of softness, lack of anywhere to rest, to stop, to slow down, to reflect. All this hard-edged, these structures everywhere. This world just seems to be taken over by this lack of, this thing that lacks totally in softness and comfort and warmth and sensuality. You know, this world seems to be becoming very brittle and hard. And, you know, one of the things we wondered was, you know, is this world being made ready for, because this is the type of feeling that these entities need to survive,
mm-hmm.
that they can't survive in the softness and the moisture and the,
right.
that which the human feminine brings. It needs this hard brittleness.
Right.
But on top of that, is it possible that we're not actually looking at an intruding male energy, we're actually looking at a mutated, female overlord energy? It's hard to get your head around because you want to go down the one path, oh, female equals this or male equals this, and actually right. it may be so crisscrossed over and so convoluted that's why it's taken us this long to even consider that it might run this way. It actually makes a lot more sense if it runs this way.
We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, that I'm going to actually touch on a couple more examples of the entity, pointing to the entities in my research.
Okay, so, we'll be right back.
And we're back from the commercial break.
Without the commercials.
edited for completeness. But anyways, the research. I'm going to go out. I'm going out on my hidden agendas limb. The research I've mentioned before, digging back into the past with Blavatsky and Bailey and Crowley.
Oh yes, great. Yep.
Yeah. Some people out there love them. Go right ahead. It's your New Age movement, really, Luciferianism.
So the Blavatsky, Bailey and Blavatsky interested me because of the whole female.
Yes. Yes. Madame Blavatsky and Alice Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
Very channeled writers, both of them channeled.
Right.
It's a Luciferian doctrine. And like you pointed out, I think it was a couple days ago, you had pointed out how the Statue of Liberty is a female, New York
yeah.
Harbor. And it has an epitaph at the bottom of the statue written by a woman?
That's right. So the little the plaque at the bottom of the Statue of Liberty, which says, that one that goes about, bring me your huddled masses. You're American, you should know it.
Yeah,
you know
it?
No,
I don't.
Well, it's, she lifts her lamp by the door or something, and it's, bring me your huddled masses, and etc.
You're hungry, you're poor, stuff like that.
Yeah. So that was written by Emma Lazarus, who was a Jewish female. Now, that was about something like around the 1880s. Now, back in those days, you think about it, you've got this massive statue that means so much. Women supposedly just didn't get a leg in.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they've got a woman who's written the poem that goes on the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
And Emma Lazarus, you know, just...
Mm-hmm. And
she's your, sorry, I'll just butter in again. So, but yeah, just that, you know, she is the American symbol. So you've got these females, this massive female presence, and you start to wonder.
Right. Something that has been obvious from day one in the research is hidden in plain sight. They don't hide it.
Yeah.
It's always there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if these things are presented by women and in the early days when they supposedly didn't have any rights or didn't matter or whatever, but yet they're out there,
mm-hmm.
it's right there. It's in our face.
Right.
Research again, Blavatsky and Bailey seem to be cropping up everywhere. Some people put a new spin on it, the Luciferian Doctrine. Either way, it seems to come up a lot in the research, a lot of channeled books. Channeling, well, hey, that's it's not from you, it's from the other side, beyond the veil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the higher up you go, the arts, the Hollywood, it's all, you have to sell out. You have to allow the entity access to you.
Okay, so can I just jump in here as well?
Please do.
With the Bailey and the Blavatsky, right? So something that you pointed out to me was how much they're behind the New Age movement. The
yes.
New Age movement is all
it's
their stuff.
Luciferian doctrine. Yeah.
So, and the thing with the New Age movement, it seems to me, well, anything is, it's about the women. It's for the women, by the women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just appeals to the women so much.
Right.
And it's going to be passed by Oprah, who's, you know, another one of the female.
Sisterhood. She's a Hollywood sister.
That's right. So we're looking at, the sisterhood is promoting it. It's come through the movies, this whole massive female push. But the female push is not feminine.
No.
It's very hard. It's exactly this type of energy that we're playing with today, suggesting that it connects with these female overlords, these mutated female overlords.
Right.
It's hard and rigid. It's callous. See, the way we've kind of been trained to see it as women, at least this is my take,
mm-hmm.
is that it's our turn now.
Right.
Women have been held down for century upon century, and finally,
yeah.
it's our turn, and we get to be up there, and men aren't going to dominate us anymore, and we're going to have our chance and our life, and we can have what we want, etc., etc., etc.
Yeah, and I think that this has been constructed and formulated to come up from nowhere, because as a man, and I'm speaking from my point of view, never once have I ever wanted to hurt a female, have I ever tried to dominate a female. Had I ever looked at a female as lesser than me? Friendship has always been a big part of who I am, and equal. I always said everything's always 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've had, I thought of this in school too. I never thought, oh, I'm better than her.
Right.
Oh, I'm better than him.
Right.
Competition, yeah, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never hurt a female, never hit a female. I may have been in a heated debate maybe once or twice with a female. A couple of voices have been, raised. I might have had a plate thrown at me by a female. But never have I wanted to do what supposedly mankind has done to women.
Right.
So again, constructed? I think so. To
right.
cause a divide?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because when does a... from my point of view, when does a man get his most, does he feel the biggest, the most manly, is when a woman responds to him, like sees him, at least that's what I've seen. How do I describe it? This is how it seems to me.
Okay.
The men really come into their own if women respond well to them, if they will recognize them and see them and appreciate them.
Okay, and if the shoe's on the other foot, is that the same with women as
well?
Well,
what I want to get to here
sure.
Is that if that's the case,
mm-hmm.
and this is, I mean, can you agree with that? Is that how much does a female appreciation of a man matter to a man?
A lot, yeah.
Okay.
I would say it's
okay.
Right up there.
So why would men have gone down the path of controlling, restricting,
right.
squashing down
mm-hmm.
the thing that would actually give them
more
some
life.
Of their greatest pleasure in life.
Right.
See,
life.
They wouldn't have done that.
No.
They would. That's just shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
So, again, looking to the possibility that this is too clever and cunning. This is female construct. This is not male construct. They just, why would you have done that? You know, that doesn't mean that a lot of men didn't go down that path, but but who laid the path? Who laid that yellow brick road for them?
Right.
Was it a female energy?
Well, the men would have sold out. Like I said, a lot of selling out takes place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, men, there's probably 9 out of 10 men will tell you what they want out of their power.
Right.
I don't know.
But what would power be to them without the female in their lives, you know?
Exactly.
I'm going way back here, you know, because things have gotten... I also, like I said to you, I think that if there were the female overlords and they wanted to run the world the way they had planned,
mm-hmm.
they would also have chosen the male of the species because they'd be easier to manipulate.
Right.
To, you know, what do you want? What do you guys want? Well, we want power and lots of sex and... power and lots of sex, and probably power and lots of sex.
Exactly.
And the women would go, here you go. This is what you need to do, you know? So much easier to manipulate the male of the species, I think, than the female.
Yeah, I agree.
So they would have constructed, they would have taken the path of least resistance, the easiest path.
Right.
oh, fuck, what were we talking about? There was something before that, and going back and going back. Okay, well, one thing you brought up before and I wanted to go back to as well was the arts. So along with all the architectural stuff that, you know, we were talking about before, very much is tied in the arts and how much arts has been pushed down our throat as being so significant and important. There was a movie I was going to do a write-up about, but then I couldn't be fucked, but that was called The Monuments Men. And there was this one line in The Monuments Men about George Clooney saying his... line that he'd been taught to say, you know, something along the lines of, you know, if we don't have our history, sort of, how do we have, how can we, you know, we won't even exist, how can we have any sense of ourselves? And yet you look at art for so long, art is dominated by a few grandmasters. In the scheme of things, it's a few grandmasters,
right?
One of the things that we've postulated is the idea that not only do comedians channel entities, but also the artists do.
Yes, absolutely.
How many artworks out there were painted by humans, or how many were painted by entities?
Sculpting. Why?
Yeah, sculpting. Your plays that you were written, Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
was it Francis Bacon or was it an entity?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at a bigger possible picture. I'm not out to prove anything. But just imagine if, imagine the Mona Lisa was actually painted by an entity. It wasn't painted by Da Vinci at all. It was painted by the entity, or one of the entities, that had lived within him.
Right.
The Sistine Ceiling,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But we do know is that certain great ones in the arts have been pushed and pushed and pushed. And, you know, if you want to get inside the human being, you go through pictures, you go through stories. You try and lay out the facts before people and they shut down, you know? Do you want to read a textbook or do you want a fairy story? Which one are you going to remember?
Right.
Okay? Especially the fairy story with pictures. You just pull that inside you and it's an instant meal, you know?
Well, the illuminated manuscripts we saw from back in the early days.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, what we were saying about that is this visuals with the storyline goes back to forever. So Michael doing his graphic novel... Go back to the illuminated manuscripts. What are they? They're the earliest comic books out there.
Graphic novels, right?
Yeah, they're graphic novels, exactly.
Yeah.
So, because whoever runs this show knows how to work the humans.
Mm-hmm.
They know that pictures and simple stories go down real easy.
Yeah.
That's why you have your movies, you know? And then add some music in there as well, extra powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whoever runs the show just knows us to, you know, the nth degree.
Right. Then we had also discussed the fact that the entities do need us. There's it's an interesting thought to think of this world as being the physical, you know, where entities are disembodied or whatnot. We don't know what's beyond the veil, only what we're told.
Mm-hmm.
But that they need human beings. They need us.
Yeah,
we're the creators.
It seems to be that way. Yeah, we were talking about that this morning about this world. I was sort of playing with the idea I said to you about this world would be like a younger sibling. Like you have an older sibling and a younger sibling. If you imagine the other world, whatever it is, to be the older one, then we're the one who's always trying to make what the other world, get as close as we can to creating what the other world has. You know, like, so if you have an older brother who has a car, say, and you're a younger brother, then you get in a cardboard box and pretend to be driving in a car, because that's as close as you can get with the skills and the tools that you have to that other world.
Right.
You know, we just seem to be so intimately connected to the other world, and yet we do not have the precise, we don't have the magic. You know, it feels like that world has magic and our world doesn't.
Right.
Tolkien, or the guy who wrote a very interesting article, was suggesting that with the Lord of the Rings, you know, that at the end of the Lord of the Rings book, magic leaves the earth and then humans are left to their own devices in a world without magic. You know, we've watched some of the series once. Similar sort of thing, where you've got a world that has magic,
mm-hmm.
and then a world that has almost no magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that world with no magic is always our world. It's this world that we live in. And,
right.
and it feels like that to us, doesn't it? I mean, it really feels like
right.
magic's very thin on the ground.
Right.
And yet, now, it almost feels like there's more and more magic, strange
yeah.
things happening.
Yeah. It's like the other day when I took a walk through the library. I went into the science fiction section, and there was just so much out there. And a lot of the titles were just jumping out at me because they had the words dreams in it. Dream masters, dream this, dream that. It just, everywhere I turned, it just said the word dream
right.
or magic.
Right.
And I thought to myself, well, what if 2012, you know, was just they were all priming everybody for this, that, and the other thing, but it's just really, the veil is really thin now.
Right.
And everybody's able to get, it's
right.
not really a creative spurt, but it's just a thinner veil, so everybody's picking up on everything so much faster, or it's easier to channel, or I don't know.
Right. So that makes me think about, if I go back to, say, something like the architecture.
Mm-hmm.
If it was known that that time would create this thinning of the veil, you would create a world that is far more harmonious to you and your vibration
right.
than to the ones who live here.
Right.
You need to be able to come in, and the vibration needs to be as low or as... No, let's not say low. As similar to yours.
Right.
So it allows you to be here or whatever it is you want to do, you know?
Right.
Because this world now really feels so inhuman, inhospitable,
mm-hmm.
so hard
yep.
and angular and plastic,
yep.
Unyielding, rigid. This quality that I'm thinking actually applies to these mutated female overlords.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's still very clever and very intricate and detailed, but it's brittle and rigid and...
Dry.
Yeah, it's dry. It's like, see, human women are not meant to be dry in no way. Everything about human women is moisture, and it just is. But there seems to be these dry females, you know,
right.
these... this dry female energy.
Right.
Yeah. I'm playing, you know? I'm not trying to escape and say, no, I'm not saying this thing. I just don't know whether it's like this or not. But by playing with it, I'm feeling like this really...
Mm-hmm.
We could really be onto something here, that there really is something like this at play.
It seems to be pushing us towards a transhumanist type world. Where it's going to be very technological and rigid and angular and
right.
dry and electronic. They worked their way through the eugenicists. Eugenics really took a turn after the Nazis and turned into transhumanism.
Let's do that. Let's just drop back into the eugenicists for a minute, and the work that the research that we did on the guy called Emmett Holt, who was he was around late 1800s.
Yeah.
And he was, I'm pretty sure, he trained at the Rockefeller Institute. He's some connection with the Rockefellers as well.
He does.
But he was the one who brought in these ideas about don't pick up your baby if it cries. Here's a man telling human women how to rear their children. And you have just decade upon decade of children being born and raised in a way that this guy is telling them.
Yes.
One is, how on earth did men get in a position to tell human women
right.
how to raise their children? Or then they took on the roles of the doctors.
Yeah.
You pointed something else out. You said you don't like to watch male chefs. You don't like to watch programs where the men
yeah.
are doing the cooking.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel right to you. Is it like that?
Yeah. Yeah. They're too harsh with the food. They're too rigid. It doesn't have the same feel, the same taste.
Wow. Michael's talking from sort of experience because his mother was is
retired professional chef.
Yeah, retired professional chef. So she knows food intimately.
Yes.
So you have this. You're not just being airy fairy when you talk about this. You have a lifetime of eating her food mm-hmm. and feeling the benefits of that.
Yeah, and trying other people's food and then seeing the difference. There's a lot of difference, and she's even said so. You know that if you're not enjoying it, then don't be in the kitchen. If you're
right.
sick, don't be in the kitchen. Not mm-hmm. only because people will get your germs, but you're not going to have the same effect on the food. You know, if you don't put your love or yourself into the food, you're going to meet the food in the middle, 50-50. The food's going to be terrible.
More, tell me more. What else did she say? Give me her wise words. I want more. What else did she say? You've told me that she would spit out food if she didn't like it.
Oh, yeah. If we went out to eat, and I've seen her a couple times, she would chew and bite into something, take her nap, and go, oh, that's just horrible.
Right.
You know, and just say it how it is. If she doesn't like it, she doesn't eat it.
She has a massive connection to food, and on a female
mm-hmm.
on a female level, she, yeah.
Yeah.
But what we have seen across the board is that men suddenly appear in all these areas that used to be the realm of the female.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they were telling them not to pick up the babies. They were telling them not to swaddle the babies. You mm-hmm. were leaving the baby in this big, huge open space crib where the baby
yep.
couldn't feel itself, didn't know what its boundaries were.
So then part of that book, I don't know how much was from the book and how much was from our conjecture. About the babies that died from cot death. The babies who weren't touched,
yep.
who weren't held, I think it was the guy, the way he said it, it was basically as if they almost lost their sense of themselves, would fall asleep and never wake up. They
right.
would just get lost in the dreaming world and
yep.
forget to wake up, and they would die.
Yep.
This was kind of his description, the guy who wrote the book, not Emmett Holt, about what's happening with cot deaths.
Yeah, crib death,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but then they're pushing that out there, and he was involved with eugenics,
right?
Part of the eugenics movement.
Yeah,
there was quite the push in the United States with eugenics. Rockefellers are pretty famous eugenics or eugenicists. You go that far back, and it's just right there from cradle.
Mm-hmm.
You got this, and I'm sure. I'm sure the males never came up with this idea.
Exactly. That's what I want to get to. No. Because, well, I don't know why, because it just doesn't feel right. It just, they wouldn't think of it, you know? They wouldn't. Okay, here's a good one. Why would a man voluntarily go into the realm of the female? You know, how often will a guy even want to hold his girlfriend's handbag because it's just too embarrassing if someone sees him, you know? So, why would they even think, oh, I'm going to go into the realm of the female. I'm going to go into becoming, you know, the midwife, being the gynecologist. I'm going to become a cook, go into the kitchen. I'm going to be a fashion designer,
mm-hmm.
go into the realm of fashion. Hello, you know? They wouldn't, something maneuvered them
right.
somehow into that, is my thinking anyway.
Right.
And why would you do that? You take away the places where women practice being feminine, and you dry them out. You get to where they don't, you get to a point where they don't even want to cook. It's too much effort. They're too tired because they've been out working all day.
Right.
Or that, so on so many levels, you take away their world. You crumble it. You give it over to the males. There's nothing left for them.
Right.
And you create, you very carefully create, while you're doing that, while you're taking away, while you're taking away every avenue of the female,
right,
you lay out a path that runs kind of parallel to the men. So one of the books I was looking into was a book on architecture, was about a house built by the Vanderbilts. And on reading it, it was Mrs. Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt? Vanderbilt, can't remember.
Vanderbilt.
I-L-T? E-L-T?
L- built.
Built. Okay, Vanderbilt. This is the house that Vanderbilt built. Okay. So it was the woman. I think her name was Alva, who was right there with the architect giving all the instructions. She was just, I mean, this is throughout her entire lifetime and the architect's lifetime. She was directing him all along the way, built house after house after house. Anyway, towards the end of her life, this amazing house, which I think is called something like the Marble House, she decided to turn it, she got into the suffragettes. So she got into the whole suffragette movement. She used this amazing marble house for suffragette meetings. And you know, that's kind of like one of the very early phases where your feminist, the feminist movement came in.
Right.
Where the women got to travel the parallel, the apparent parallel path of the male, so they could get equal with the male.
Right.
And it would probably be really interesting actually to just do research on the suffragette movement from this angle now. But you've got these eugenicists or these big, big names who are just oozing their way into ground level women's movement and building up
right,
so that they've got the women just being directed down a path towards that whole feminist movement, come mm-hmm. further down the track, and to where we are now, which is the apparent, with capital letters, glowing bright, huge letters, apparent sort of equality and equalizing with the males, and now it's our turn, and take that, you bastards, etc., etc.
Yeah, the take that, you bastards part is the part that's being orchestrated as well.
All of it's orchestrated.
Yeah.
All of it. So the women were driven, it's our turn, this has been done to us for years, mm-hmm. you did it, the men did it.
Mm-hmm.
And what if you stood back and go, hang on a minute, maybe the men didn't do it, although they were well puppeted, that it was some kind of mutated female overlords, because they would be, it's only females who would understand how you could herd females so cleverly, so well, and you would never ever even think
right.
it might be females, because hey, females have always been hard done by. Mm-hmm. It's the men who've done it to us.
Yeah, and the eugenics, I know I mentioned this before in one of our earlier podcasts, the eugenics movement, part of their plan was to get the mother also out of the household, not only starting with the lack of touch with the child,
mm-hmm.
with Holt in the 1800s, it went to the 50s, and in the 50s, when America was, everything was going well, two cars in every driveway, mom was home with the children, raising the family, they said, okay, we need to pull the mother out of the household.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what man would have, what guy would have come up with that idea? Let's pull the mother out of the household because it's going to separate the family even more.
Right, because at that time, that was going to take away also the guys, you know, he's the breadwinner. At that point,
yeah.
That's how men were. They were the breadwinner, they were the...
Yeah, and then you get your 60s movement.
Yeah.
Not,
of course, that I want to go back to those times and go, that was it.
Yeah.
Ah, if only we could go back to those happy times. Because yeah. I know
no.
from the stories I've heard how yeah. fucked up they were.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's always been fucked up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We can't go back and go, this is a great time. Nor do I think we can go back to any tribe or civilization or special people in the middle of the wilderness who were so in tune with everything. It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Because all of this has been orchestrated since time immemorial. Nothing has been left untouched. I don't give it nothing. As far as I'm concerned, nothing. All of it. From your most amazing tribe who just is so together and lovely and has all these words of wisdom, them too. It's all in there. It's all been orchestrated. All of it.
Mm-hmm.
The only way is forward, always having 2% doubt about everything, never settling for an answer. Just a proto-truth is the best. Edward de Bono's proto-truth. It's the best truth you've got at the moment until you come up with an even better one. That kind of a thing.
Right.
Soon as you settle for an answer, you're totally fucked, actually. You're just completely fucked.
Right.
So all this today is a proto-truth. It's a suggestion that this is what could be happening. And it's the best I've got at the moment. I'm having to seriously consider that this...
Right.
Something like this has been going on, that there have been some kind of, have been and are still going, some kind of a female
mm-hmm.
overlord.
Well, it's like that saying, behind every great man there's a
well, yeah.
greater woman.
Yeah.
Not to pull away from the monarch mind control researchers out there that's been doing a lot of research, because there are, I did the research also, I just spent a lot of time on monarch mind control research. But yes, there are some out there. There's plenty of people who've been we've been mind controlled, the programming.
Well, that's where you fall down. See, we're all monarch mind control, you know, we're all monarch mind controlled. How do you make people not notice it? You give them the extremes so that you won't look to yourself and go, oh, hold on a minute. You know, what did we grow up with? My God. How many TV programs have we watched? How much shit have we just swallowed down without even thinking about it?
It's your daily programming. Yeah. But there is the feminine out there, though, that do know what they're doing and are not monarchs. Like, I'd even be willing to go out on a limb like Madonna.
So you're talking about the sisterhood here.
I'm talking the sisterhood. Madonna is not a monarch mind control victim. She is definitely done deliberate. I mean, you just have to look at the trail. There are some monarchs out there in Hollywood. They get... They come in broken already, and a lot of them are just... but it's not the big famous ones that walk the red
carpet. Right.
The big famous ones that walk the red carpet are part of it.
Right.
They're part of the.
I know. I've ordered a few books from the library. I just want to go through and be reminded of the huge females out there, because you know, it's all very well for us to talk about them, but until you remind yourself of. Until you re-remind yourself of these people, they tend to stay hidden somewhere in your mind. They're just lurking, and they're very protected.
Yeah.
So, for instance, you go through a book on movie stars, and you go, oh, I forgot about this person. Oh, there's this person. Or about the TV programs that you watch as kids, you go, oh, I forgot about this one. Oh, I forgot about this one.
Yeah.
So they're perfectly tucked away, safely protected somewhere in your mind. Each one seems to have its own compartment.
Right.
Each TV program, each movie star, each TV star.
Yeah.
So I want to go back and see again the sisterhood that you showed me, you know, one of the YouTube, the clips. You got me thinking about these big, so well-known, yet because they're females, they're not like a male actor. They're just the female. They're big female actors, but they were just...
Yeah.
You stopped paying attention. One of the women I looked at was Helen Mirren, who
yeah.
is an English actress. So to the American audience, she's probably almost nothing. Yet she has played... She played Queen Elizabeth not that long ago in a movie. And then I noticed she's also played Elizabeth the First.
Really?
She's got this huge history. And then there was a book at the library I was thumbing through, and I'm looking at, my God, look at this woman's history, this, the actress, the things that she's done. I had no idea she, I don't mean to be a prude or anything, but I didn't expect to find her like half naked,
right.
Dressed up in weird shit and all this kind of stuff. because I just know this person as the one on screen and the TV ones I've seen and the way she's been presented in the media.
Right.
So you never really look behind the scenes at what makes up the sort of the sum of this person. What's the, you know, what's actually, how many entities are they portraying perhaps? You know, how many entities are in there might be a good one.
Right.
It'd be like you could win a thing of jelly babies, you know, or jelly beans, you know,
yeah.
A sweets, a bottle of sweets. Well, Johnny, guess how many entities?
Yeah, well, Johnny Depp or, who's that guy from Titanic that I, Leonardo DiCaprio. Might be some good winners right there.
Right.
Win the jelly babies.
Right.
But, the tennis world also, the tennis world seemed to have a big
right, that was a really interesting one.
Influence.
So, yeah, you were saying pretty much most of that, or all the big tennis players seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
The one that you showed me had Billie Jean King pretty much being the, what would you call her, the overlord of all the female stars. All these tennis players were just absolutely bowing and scraping to the earth at the mention of her name.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and I find the idea of female overlords or this kind of sisterhood actually much scarier than any kind of patriarchy or male overlord.
Yeah.
Because I know, as a female, the kind of cunning and cruelty that females can sink to.
Right.
And it's scary stuff, actually. It's scary.
Yeah. If there's any listeners out there that you know of powerful females that own mega corporations or anything like that, please leave a link to some information.
Yeah.
Because we've only touched on the stuff that's in our face right now. I'm sure there's more powerful females
right
beyond these. I mean, I'm sure that Billie Jean King was given some sort of a, here, you need to go do this, and, you know, we'll take care of you, or whatever.
Right. So the sisterhood become the priestesses
right
of this female overlord, mutated female overlordship that we are playing with today, because I can't say that it's, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But it makes enough sense that I'm happy to play with it for a while and see what comes up and, you know, see what other people have to say as well.
Mm. I would be interested too.
Yeah. But just, you know, to go back through all the Hollywood females and you see the tennis female and just, there's a lot out there, you know, there's, but they slip right under the radar because it's, oh, they're just females. Mm. You know, if you want to hide something, how do you hide it? Hide it in plain sight, make it seem weak. Put something else out there, you know? I mean, you talk about Ronald Reagan, Nancy Reagan. I mean, honestly, who could look at Ronald Reagan and think, there goes a clever, cunning man?
Or Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, another one. You know, you just look and you go, you almost feel sorry for them, you know?
Yeah. Well, Bill is just not there.
Oh, yeah. And
Hillary was,
Yeah. How do you hide something so cleverly like that? No, women are weak. Women are...
Yeah.
And again, you link them together, go women, but we're not talking women.
Mm.
We're talking two different energies. In the same way I wanted to try and bring in, when we talk about gays, I think there seems to be two energies here. That there are the same sex, the males who work for the female overlords.
Yeah.
And then there are genuine gays who... That's their makeup. That's what they prefer. I'm not enough of an expert. I'm not even going to try and go there. But what it's looking like from everything I'm seeing going through, say, the Architectural Digest, going through the, there is just, I can only say it's a feel. There's a feel of an energy. And this feel seems to fit very well.
They have the similar patterns too.
It's a pattern and a structure that's very similar. The feel of the energy, the hardness, that we're looking at males who serve this energy.
Mm-hmm.
maybe if we didn't even use male or female, but we just used a type, if we renamed it as a type of energy, there's a hard, brittle, dry, angular energy. Say, maybe it's not even female, I don't know.
I mean, it's definitely...
And these ones who are doing the architecture resonate with, have this dry, brittle energy, and they're putting it into their designs. It's right there in their designs. And we, the human silly people and cannon fodder and are told, hey, this is amazing. This is amazing art. This is amazing architecture. This is amazing sculpture. This is so arty. This is really amazing. And we buy it. We go, oh, it's art. We all sort of go around, oh, that looks like shit. But hey, it's worth $60 billion, so it must be good.
Yeah.
All they've got to do is attach a monetary value to it, and we believe in it. Have you noticed that? In your architectural or in your art magazines, they put a price, it's sold for $722,000. Oh my God, this must be so good. Even though I don't like it,
right,
and it makes me cringe, it must be really, really good.
Right.
Putting a monetary value on something is such a good way to override people's common sense.
Yeah.
Because we've all been trained to bow down to money and to extreme values, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very, very true. So we've we've actually touched quite a few different topics. I know we brushed on in prior podcasts, we brushed on a little bit too. But there's a certain energy, a certain force that just seems to be hell bent, dare I say it. And I'm not going to go down the religious road, because the religious road is just not something I'm going to tackle. But the architects, the higher they go up in their education, the more everything, the patterns are just, they just seem the same.
It does seem the same. Yeah, it does. It seems very.
I couldn't go to a museum and take a nap there. You walk into a museum, you're there for 10 minutes and you feel drained and you just want to leave.
That's very true.
And these guys and these these men and women of the Architecture Digest or whatever they were and the big books, they're decorating their homes and that kind of thing, and it's not human.
No, there's no for you to rest. And I think we're probably almost done. But I wanted to throw in something else just before we go.
Right.
As another pointer towards this possible structure, again, the female overlords. And that is female dress, female fashion,
mm-hmm.
and going back through the ages. I don't think any man would actually have invented it. You pointed out yourself the other day. You said, men had invented women's clothes, they would have been wearing mini skirts like from a very long time ago.
Right.
But you go back through women's fashion, the cruelty of the fashions, the great big, where their skirts are pulled into just about nothing. They got the great big heavy clothes on. They can't move.
Yeah.
The restrictiveness of it. And even... to be honest, in many ways, it's not that different now. It's just a different type of fashion.
Right.
You're still... If you want to be fashionable, you're not going to be comfortable.
Exactly.
You're going to look good. So there's this... there's a cruelty. Straight jackets are cruel.
Yeah,
and inhuman.
It's restrictive so that the woman can't flow naturally. If you're in tune with your body and flowing naturally, that's not what they want.
That's right. So... what I have seen on so many levels, in so many different areas of a woman's life, she is constrained and restricted and tied down and held back. Why was that necessary?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I go back to, if we're looking at female overlords, they had to restrain the females from ever catching on to this.
Right.
And because women know how other women work.
Right.
And angry women are dangerous women.
Yeah, and that's when the other day when I was mentioning this whole orchestrated angry feminism that's coming up.
Right.
Who's that brick wall that's in between the overlord females and the angry females? The men.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be then the brick wall in the middle.
You know, as you said that, that's quite interesting because that would also be, you know, say we're just getting to the point where we wake up and go, what the fuck, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
And we are ready to see
that
it hasn't been the men, but the female overlords, but they have shaped it so that our anger comes up and we are presented with, hey, here's your target, this is who you attack.
Right.
Rather than opening our eyes a little bit further and going, who's that hiding behind the men there?
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying, I'm not trying to absolve all the men.
Because no,
the
I
men
know.
That had been manipulated chose
yeah.
to do that.
Sure.
But
you're never going to get anywhere by taking down the pawns.
Right.
You know, by attacking the pawns if there's something behind them that's been, you know, manipulating them.
Right.
If you want to change the gameplay, if you want to change the structure, or you want to create a new one.
Right.
You know, just say, all right, fuck this structure, off you go. This world, go do your damnedest, you know, but I don't want to be part of it anymore. I want to be part of something else.
Right.
Then to be aware of how we were manipulated.
Right.
The energy that was doing it so that we don't get caught again. We don't get fooled again.
Exactly. I think that's a good note to leave off.
So do I.
Well, thank you for having me on again, Alex.
Oh, a pleasure always.
I've got a long boat ride home.
So don't forget to check out Michael's. I'll put a link on at the bottom. Check out Liminal Space. And let's see what we can do to create a structure that works wholesomely and fluidly and softly.
And nourishing.
And nourishing.
Nurturing.
Yeah.
Nurturing is part of the feminine, and that's so lacking.
Yeah. Let's get the sexes back alive again. Alive and kicking and working together. Okay. See ya.
Bye, Alex.
Bye.